Why don't we go ahead and get started?
We can switch if you want.
John, are you sure? Anything you'd like to add?
I'm going to introduce Dave Sorrell. Go ahead and start down the cost of service. I remind them we have a hard stop at 7:00.
Well, thanks you for taking time to listen to our presentation tonight. Every few years, we like to do a cost of service study for the different utilities divisions. See what kind of revenue we're generating, what the cost to provide the service is, and what rate adjustments may be recommended. So we did an RFP. We selected Stantec Consulting to do this work. So I've got Andrew Burnham and Kyle Stevens here tonight to present the results of their findings for cost of service study for the sewer utility, stormwater utility, and the solid waste utility, all three. So with that, I'll let Andrew start.
That's perfect. Thanks, Dave. So, good evening, council members. My name is Andy Burnham. I was the project director for the study. Kyle Stevens is our project manager. And so I just wanted to kind of start with a bit of an executive summary. And then Kyle is going to go walk through each of the different utility services and pause at the appropriate times for questions throughout, but specifically as we transition from one utility system to the next. As Dave mentioned, we looked at the three different systems this year. Previously, I worked for a company called Burton & Associates, and we had the opportunity to conduct a study for the city in 2014 that looked at sanitary sewer as well as stormwater rates at that time. At a similar time frame, there was also a 2015 study conducted that looked at the solid waste rates. And so this, as Dave mentioned, is really the periodic update to those cost of service studies. So it's been the city's past practice to try to look at these things every 5 years or so. The recommendations from these studies are generally followed, but each year they're updated as part of taking into account changes in variables and as part of the annual budget discussion process. 2021 rate study does include cost of service analysis findings. And we're going to go in depth on those. It does include a projection of future year increases that go beyond just the immediate fiscal year that we're looking at to give you a sense of what the outlook is for each of the different utility systems. So a rate study is really a series of interconnected investigations trying to answer three fundamental questions. How much revenue is required to cover the expenditure requirements of each utility? Operating expenses, capital costs, including any principal and interest expenses, making sure we have adequate reserves as part of our planning process. Once we've addressed how much revenue our rates need to collect to cover the cost for our utility services, the next question we need to answer is how should those costs be allocated, or from whom should we be collecting those costs from? And so that's where cost of service really comes into play, where we look at the different components of providing service to each of your different types of customer types or groups, if you will, to make sure that we have a fair and equitable distribution of those costs between customers that's consistent with how they cause us to incur costs to provide that service. And once we've done that, then we look at the third question of how do we want to collect those costs from each of those respective customer groups or types through a combination of maybe fixed and variable charges, for instance, with the sewer system. We then have to look at developing what's the actual rate schedule that's going to recover those requirements for each of the utility systems. And so as part of our analysis, we've identified a series of recommendations. We have done a five-year plan that's outlined for you, and you'll see this as Kyle goes through it, what the forecast looks like for each of your different individual utility systems. And again, this is something that would intend to be updated each year as you have those budget conversations and update capital plans as you manage these utilities going forward. We do have specific rate structure recommendations for this current fiscal year that we're in that are suggested to be implemented on April 1st. And this would be notably for the sewer and solid waste systems. The sewer modifications are very minor in nature and are really updating just to reflect our current cost. The solid waste system was a very deep dive, as Kyle will get into, about looking at the various types of services that we provide and the specific cost associated with each of those different services. So there's a lot to unpack on solid waste. Part of the process, we also looked at the cost of providing service to the district customers. We do have recommendations based upon those cost of service findings for going forward, how we should be pricing service to district customers. We do also have recommendations to consider about stormwater. While we're not recommending any specific changes to stormwater rates today, we do have a couple things on the horizon that we do want to make sure that you're thinking about in terms of not just capital improvements from master planning, but the ability to leverage different data and collect impervious area information to be able to use that as a basis for potentially allocating costs in the future. And lastly, we have also updated the capital connection fees for the sewer system. These are the one-time fees for growth or new development or redevelopment to buy into the system to pay for that unit cost of capacity. Those were last updated as part of the 2014 study for the sewer system. They were phased in over a four-year time period. They haven't been adjusted in about 3 years since, I think, 10-1 of 18, consistent with some of your other rates for sewer and solid waste service. It's been a couple of years since they've been adjusted, and so we have updated that unit cost and have recommendations for you on that as well for modest increases. As you wrap everything up into kind of a tidy bow, we try to include a summary table here that says for a typical single-family home that uses 5 units or 500 cubic feet of sewer service per month, has solid waste service, and then has the typical stormwater fee, a main living area under 2,000 square feet. What's the current utility bill? It's $45.86. With the recommendations, which do include some revenue adjustments or increases based on cost requirements, that would go to $47.75. That would be a $1.89 increase in that typical utility bill, or about 4%. All customers are going to see different impacts depending upon their combination of services. They're non-residential, the meter size and the magnitude of sewer use will come into play. So all customers will have different levels of impacts based upon the recommendations, which is consistent with what happens when we update these cost of service studies. There are changes to different customers based on their characteristics. So with that as an overview, I'd like to hand it over to Kyle and start by going through the sewer system first. And then we'll obviously take questions at the appropriate time before we move into the solid waste systems and close with stormwater.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Andy. Great to be here this evening. So I'll go into sewer first. I wanted to put this image up as we go into a revenue sufficiency analysis. It's much like taking several pieces of the puzzle and putting them together so we can see the full picture. What this shows is what we're looking at is personnel, operating vehicle and equipment, debt service, reserve levels for not only the current budget year that we're in, but also projecting that out forward. And what we looked at is a 10-year forecasting horizon for the utilities we'll be looking at this evening. This is a current snapshot of the budget for FY22 for the cost to drain a tub. So there's roughly $5.6 million in personnel expenditures in a year, $11 million in operations, and $14.5 million in capital. So just a quick way to summarize the full expenditures that we have to expend to provide this service on an ongoing basis. Now next I'll go into a couple screenshots here, and you'll see this for each of the utilities we look at, and I'll take a little bit of time to talk through this. So this first one we're looking at is a snapshot of our forecasting model for the next 10 years, as it stands with all the current updated budget information and audited financials. And this current one I like to call the diagnostic. So this is as if you went to your doctor and said, how's my health? And what we're doing here is we're keeping the rate revenues constant at their current levels going forward, and then adding in all of the cost requirements that we know about and expect over the coming 10 years, including the personnel operating, and one of the more, one that fluctuates a little bit more is gonna be the capital funding on an ongoing basis to make investments in the system overall. Now what this shows is, with no rate increases, we would expect in this first graphic here, this is the ending year fund balance of our operating fund. The black line is our policy target, where we would like to stay at or above in each year. What this shows is without a revenue increase, going into fiscal year 24, we would project that we would be below that policy target. And you can see there's a pretty steep slope there. We'd actually project that we'd be out of money by 2025 in this particular utility. So this is not a recommended plan. What this shows is with the current level of operating revenues and what we expect to have to invest in the system and provide for revenues, it would not be sustainable in the near term. Just a few pop-ups in. The last one was just debt coverage. So in these models, we're always looking at ensuring that there's multiple things. I mean, the one I mentioned was the level of reserves, also though that we can access credit markets. We need to continue to borrow money in the future for any projects. So this next graphic, what we've gone ahead and done here is layered in increases on an annual basis in order to meet those policy targets of reserves that we're trying to meet. So you can see now in my operating chart over here, that black line and the blue line are tangent in each year in the near term going forward. And the reason for that is because at FY22, we now have a 6.5% increase in revenue, followed by another 6.5% in 2023. So what's occurring in these outputs that we're seeing is with the fact that we haven't done a few increases in the last few years, we're seeing a bit of near-term pressure in order to raise the revenues to meet the current level of operational expenses and capital investments. Now, the projections show that once we get through that period, we believe it can drop down to 5% and then 3% out of there. So once we get through that near-term adjustment, it's likely that it can come down to a more inflationary level going forward. One more scenario, Rand, so we wanted to test the sensitivity of the level of rate increases. And in this particular scenario, what we did is we took out an increase in fiscal year 22. So for the fiscal year that we're in, we've left that flat and then allowed the model to calculate what the level of rate increases would be needed on a go-forward basis. What this shows is then in fiscal year 23, if we did nothing this year, we need a much larger increase to balance the books. It shows a 16% increase in fiscal year 23. Now, once that's completed, it would be, again, sustainable with kind of inflationary levels going forward. So it really is fundamentally in that near term, an adjustment period to get the cash flows balanced here. And again, this would be a very sustainable plan where your cash balances in each year would be on target with the policy level that we would expect. So now we'll move into the next step of the analysis. This is the cost of service. And so what we're doing here is we're taking an x-ray of the expenditures within the sewer fund, and we're allocating them through one of two functions you can think about. So on the left side, I've got fixed cost, and on the right, I've got variable cost, volumetric cost. And what we're doing is using this fundamentally the same methodology the city currently has in place, but going line item by line item in the most current budget to update the allocation of these two expenditures between these functional categories. So what you'll see is on the fix, the first one that comes up there is debt service. So regardless of customers' changes in usage on the system, the city incurs debt service costs. You've got to repay your debt obligations, principal and interest on an annual basis. So it makes a lot of sense in our mind to have that as a fixed cost that would be potentially recovered on the monthly fixed charges for the sewer system. Take something like operations and maintenance. That one is much better on the volumetric side of the equation because it's much more tied to ongoing usage and the consumption or the usage of the sewer system on an ongoing basis. So we've allocated all of those costs to the volumetric side of the equation. And then one of the larger items on an annual basis that I mentioned, those large investments in the system we make, cash funded capital, is what we're calling that on this particular graphic. We've split that 50-50 between the fixed cost and the volumetric cost. And down here at the bottom just shows the net allocation of $8.5 million to fixed cost and $15.5 to volumetric cost. Now the real question of that, and I'll get to it in one second when we move to this next slide, is what does that mean? But what we're going through on this particular slide is we've got the two separate sides. We've got the fixed cost and the volumetric. We're fundamentally going to tie the fixed cost to those monthly charges that a customer gets on their utility bill. That's irregardless of usage within the month. Where the volumetric side is tied to the ongoing measurements of usage through the water meter. So currently, the sewer utility has 42% of its revenue that come in the form of fixed charges. Those are shown in this particular one in the gray portion of these bar graphs, and the orange is the volumetric section. The changes in the calculations that we've made of this study would recommend a reduction in the level of that fixed cost recovery down to 37%. So this is a very modest reduction in the level of ongoing fixed cost recovery. Brings you very much into alignment with the overall utility industry. And this has another benefit of enhancing affordability on the lower usage levels for sewer. This does include, as we mentioned a second ago, and all the rates that I'll show you, do include an overall 6.5% increase, the amount of additional revenue we need that would be effective in April of the next year, 2022. So these would be the proposed or calculated rates that have come out of the study with the changes that I've just mentioned between having 6.5% more revenue and additionally reallocating the fix versus the volumetric. What you'll see here first are the monthly fixed charges. And so many of the residential customers will be up on the top end of this chart at a 5/8 size. As your meter size increases, though, those levels of monthly fixed charges go up to recognize the differential impacts you can have on the system. What this shows is with that change, if we take the inside first and we stick with a 5/8, you can see it's 1237. The updated will actually show a reduction in this because we've reallocated some of the revenue from fixed to the volumetric. These monthly fixed fees actually come down a little bit. If we go over to the outside, these are just outside the municipal boundaries, you can see the exact same trend where they come down ever so slightly from the current levels. Now those are counterbalanced and a little bit more from the volumetric side. And so these are the charges on a monthly basis for usage that's measured in CCF or hundreds of cubic feet of usage. Currently it's 255 within the city. The updated would be 294. And so you can see, well, the fixed charges came down a little bit, volumetrics come up a little bit in order to make sure we're entirely whole from a revenue standpoint. But this rebalances where we're getting the revenue from between the fixed and the volumetric. And again, outside city is a little bit higher over here to the right, so it's 383 currently up to 441 with the calculated changes. So after we've updated this, we've then put together just a quick survey here of other peer municipalities that are very similar to Columbia. And what this shows is now on the left in the dark orange is where we currently are at 2512. This is for an average level of usage for a residential count. With the recommended changes that I've talked through tonight, we would actually move up one rung here to 2638 on that, but still would be below average of all of these other peer municipalities which we've put in here, which is shown in the blue line that goes across the top. So point being, on the sewer side, these changes are really modest in nature. We don't expect them to change fundamentally the bills too much. And in a relative comparison here, you can be very similar. Now, I'd also mention, I haven't accounted for any other changes here. My guess is being some of these other providers will likely have to increase rates as well. And there's also underlying differences always between communities. So I just mentioned that. You can never quite get apples to apples, but we always like to have a picture of where we sit compared to other peer municipal providers.
Do all of those peer municipalities have municipally owned sewer systems?
So I would tend to think the vast majority do have municipally owned sewer systems. There's obviously going to be some nuances under that, and I haven't conducted any detailed analysis to the exact ownership structure, but they are similar to you, or geographically similar to you and the service they provide here. So I'll move on to another part of the analysis, and this was a deeper dive. So we were asked as part of the rate study to look at the district rates. Currently, the district rates, which are not always, but oftentimes individual contracts that are outside of the city's municipal limits, where wastewater is sent through the city system for treatment. Most of those contracts are not all the same, but most of them right now have a multiplier on the operating rates by which they pay 80% of the current inside city rates. What we were asked to do is do a detailed analysis into the actual usage of the city system to understand what that multiplier should be based on the characteristics of use. And so what we did is we went through the various different types of expenditures and expense centers the city has over here on the left. We then went through each one and allocated a portion that said, is this city only use, or is this going to be a function that is joint city and district use? And you can see individually how those different elements will weight between the two of them. In total, when we looked at this analysis and added and summated all of the costs between city only use and district use, what we came up with was 92%. Meaning that a district customer roughly uses 92% of all of the wastewater services that are funded through this utility. Now contrast that against the 80% that's currently paid for these services. So we're finding that the multiplier should be reduced and to be closer to 1.0. So it's a 92% multiplier. Now we would have a recommendation of how that's actually applied though that would be a little bit different than how it shows up today. So over on the left side of this particular table, these are the current monthly rates and the volumetric rate. As I mentioned, for the many of those district customers, it's going to be an 80% multiplier across the board for the fixed and volumetric. When we went through our cost allocation, though, I had mentioned some of the expenditures we were very careful about where they're placed. And specifically, debt service was one of those, right, that's on the fixed side of the equation. Recognizing that some of those expenditures don't change with ongoing usage and the city incurs them, our recommendation is to get to the 92%, but to get to it by applying a 1.0 multiplier on all of the fixed charges and then having the volumetric charges at 87%, which would get you overall to this number, but doing it in a way that really comports fundamentally with the way that we've been very careful about where the expenditures are allocated in the rate structure.
in your analysis, did you identify whether customers outside the city pay a connection fee to access our sewer and how it compares to those inside the city limits?
So it's my understanding right now many of those customers do not pay a connection fee when they come on. We did particularly look at that, and for new connections, we do believe it would be all new connections should fundamentally pay a connection fee. The connection fee that we'll go through in a second that has been calculated for this utility does not include many of the developer contributed assets or grant assets, and so that connection fee is very, very applicable to these types of customers who may be coming on outside of municipal boundaries. So a quick revenue calculation we went through. Now, as I mentioned a second ago, there's many individual contracts associated with these district customers, so it's not a monolithic group, and it's not something you could particularly update overnight. What we have done here, though, is calculate that their current revenues on the system are a little over $1 billion. If we were able, and this would be the update in fiscal year 22 with the increased rate, so it's 1.08. If we were overnight able to update all of those customers, what this shows is just their revenue contribution to the system, which would increase their revenue quite a bit over where it would be in fiscal year 22 without this change to the point, the 0.92 that we've calculated for the surface multiplier. So it's not saying that you can get there right there, but on a go-forward basis, recognizing the fact that they are using more of your system than the current multiplier will enhance revenues over time for these particular customers.
Could we just back up a bit?
Sure.
On the multiplier?
Yes.
What's the rationale for district customers to pay less than 100% of what city customers pay?
So as I understand it, the historical rationale is that there is some investment in local infrastructure that they have
out in the county.
Yes,
where
before they connect into the city system, that's then transmitted through the interceptors to the treatment plant. So this 0.8 was to recognize the fact that they have made and do maintain to a certain extent some of that local infrastructure. And so what we want to do is go through and update and make sure that's really still consistent with the ongoing usage.
And that infrastructure is owned by the Boone County Regional Sewer District?
Indeed.
Yep, those local collection facilities. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And those are then still used when a property annexes in or signs an agreement to annex and then gets connected in to the wastewater treatment plants. Okay, yep. Thank you. But yes. You feel like that 80% is too low?
It is.
Based on some analysis that you've done, and you're recommending increasing it to 92.
Yeah, so when we look at it, the vast majority of the system they're still using. It's a very small component of that local system that we're talking about that would be the difference, I guess, from a normal customer where it would go right to their door.
Right, okay, thank you.
Absolutely. So with that, I'll go just to the last section on sewer. So this is the connection fees. The connection fees are going to be the one-time fees that are paid for a new connection to the wastewater system. So this is very different than the ongoing operating rates that we just talked through. There are three different ways to calculate this. What we did is looked at the city's data, understood where you are from a growth perspective, and the best way to update your particular one is the buy-in method, where we're looking at a system that has ample capacity, where it can serve new growth when it comes onto the system. And so it's a fundamental process of quantifying the value of those investments that the city's made, and then attaching them to when a new connection comes on, how much they should pay for that investment that's been made in the past to serve them.
So, could you go back and maybe just talk through the three different methods?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So a buy-in method, as I mentioned, is gonna be really fundamentally where you've got a system in place where it can handle new connections that are coming on and has ample growth to serve them. When we go down, the incremental is gonna be a system by which you have maybe future investments in the next few years where you're gonna need to make those investments there to serve growth. So you can imagine a case where you're using all of your current capacity at the wastewater treatment plant and you're gonna look out in your CIP and say, hey, we're gonna build a brand new one in a few years to serve that growth. Well, we really wanna take that cost as the cost for new growth instead of the previous one that you've already made. So it's a flip in which way we're looking in the mirror, if you will. The third one down here is going to be a hybrid of the two. So it's going to be a system where maybe we already have some capacity available, but we also have some big investments we need to make, and we're going to blend the cost of capacity together to get a weighted average.
And are you saying that those three methods come up with different numbers?
They do. They would. Mm-hmm. And they, what I'm saying is they are three different avenues of investigation that we would use depending on the circumstances on the ground. And in your particular case, the one that makes the most sense would be the buy-in up top.
How much do they typically vary when you do all three? Really, there's just two and the other one's combined. Yep. How much do those two vary?
So I guess one way to answer this, fundamentally, these two I can't do for your system because you really don't have any new growth or big investments coming up. But what I would say when we do those, oftentimes the growth or the cost of capacity in the future is oftentimes a lot more expensive. So when we look at systems that are going to invest in a brand new treatment plant, that oftentimes might be new technology. It might be quite a bit more expensive than one that was maybe 30 or 40 years ago.
And so at those points in time, when you do have that significant growth, expansion-related projects start to come into your horizon, mm-hmm. it's perfectly acceptable and appropriate to then look at switching the methodology to account for that and how you set those connection fees. But right now, with what we see in the current plans, we just don't see that type of a capital expansion on the horizon, which lended itself well to the buy-in method.
Okay, but with both ways, the new development is supposed to pay 100% of the capacity expansion cost for that utility. Do you guys ever do cost of service studies for electric utilities?
We do.
So why is it common practice not to use either of these methods in electricity?
Electricity has been a little bit different on the capital cost recovery philosophies, relying a lot on contributions, but also a lot of times they'll use the utility basis of rate making, which factors in rate of return and depreciation to recover capital investment. And so I don't know if that's the way the electric utility works here, is the utility basis or cash needs, but you do the utility basis? Yeah, so that's why you capture your capital costs through that process.
Through
rates that capture both a return of the investment and a return on the investment. So you get your capital cost recovery through the rate mechanisms themselves.
But then the people paying that are all of the existing customers.
That's right.
Instead of just the new customers. So it's not 100% recovery from the new customers.
Correct.
So why is it done differently for electric than sewer?
Yeah. All the industries have been a little bit different between electric, natural gas, water resources, you know, even stormwater and solid waste. You really don't tend to see these upfront capital cost recovery mechanisms on things like solid waste or stormwater or electricity. And oftentimes it comes down to the fact that a lot of times local service providers, such as yourselves, don't necessarily have a significant amount of generation assets. In some cases they do, but in many cases the industry has just moved away from and not really ever used in those industries those upfront cost recovery mechanisms. So they're very rarely used in those industries, but very common on kind of the wet utilities with water and wastewater in particular. So, and it's been recognized, I think, because of the investment in the treatment plants. They're 30-year, 50-year, they're big investments, and when you have to plan and make those, you're really trying to do as much as you can to cover those costs.
But I mean,
costs.
It's really the same. And we buy a lot of our electricity in from generators out of state even, and we're paying for the construction of those generating capacities out there in our fees. So it would still seem fair and logical to me that we recover.
Sure, and it's certainly not necessarily precluded. We'd have to look at, you know, the rules and regulations governing the electric rates, which we haven't done for you here.
I understand, I'm taking this off the course here.
Conceptually, it could be done. It's just traditionally not been done.
All right, thanks very much, good answers.
Mr. Thomas, do you know the status of your growth impact study report?
I don't, actually. It's been probably 6 to 12 months since I spoke to a couple of members of that commission.
Mr. Teddy, do you know when this council might receive a copy of that report?
Probably next month, February,
the report
is Thank you. Perfect. I'll proceed. So a couple really key considerations as we go into the calculation of a connection fee here. The math at the end of the day is really simple up here, and I've just put it in equation format. We've got the value of the system. We're taking all the individual line items of fixed asset, but it's going to arrive at one number. We're going to subtract off of that any particular credits or developer contributions that shouldn't be counted in that, and then we're going to divide it by the system capacity in order to unitize it so we can scale that particular fee by a customer's usage of the system. We then will look at value of the system, as I mentioned, credits, outstanding principal on any existing debt, so we get into a pretty detailed listing and analysis of the existing assets to really ensure that we can capture that value in the investment that the city's made into the system. Now this shows the detailed calculations up here of how we've arrived at that, looking at the sewer system's pumping and conveyance capacity as well as treatment capacity. What I'm going to concentrate and focus your attention on is actually down on this bottom section. So for a current residential, what it's called an ERU, a residential equivalent connection, the cost is $2,400 for a new connection at the 5/8 meter size. As we've gone through this analysis, we're currently calculating the updated cost of that investment, however, at roughly $2,797. So what we're seeing is a 17% increase in the cost of that. And again, those fees haven't been updated in a few years, so in my mind, this also reflects some of that ongoing just inflation. It just costs each year a little bit more to invest in the system. And so our recommendation, as we talk about capacity fees, would be to update this particular fee to fully capture 100% of the cost of the investments that the city's making on an ongoing basis in order to provide that capacity when growth does occur. Now, I did mention the one we just went over is the $2,400 in the middle here at the very top, which is updating to $2,797. However, much like I just talked about on your fixed charges for operating, we like to scale these fees with the ongoing capacity that a particular connection. So a larger connection, a 6, an 8, a 12-inch, they can put a lot more capacity onto the system. So this fee scales in an upward manner in order to recognize that. And we've provided in this table an updated scaling on the exact same scaling you have currently, but with an updated cost basis for all of these particular.
So you go through the same calculation for each of those different meter sizes?
So roughly what we do is we're, so basically the idea is that these bigger meters can pull a lot more water off the system, turn out the wastewater, and then send it to the wastewater treatment facility. So we're using the ratios through AWWA, which provides these an industry source, provides the relative difference in size, if you will. And that's how we've got to the scaling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but on your calculation on the prior slide, so you've got... So that's the net system value for the entire system.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Do you think about, you know, what percentage of the entire system is allocated for, say, residential use in 5/8 meters?
So the per ERU calculation that we're doing, that per equivalent residential unit, we've taken the entire system capacity and expressed it in a number of equivalent residential units that we have capacity to serve. And so if you go to the next slide, Kyle, so 5/8 inch meters, that's one equivalent residential unit. But those 2-inch meters, they have 8 times the flow capacity of that 5/8 inch meter, so they represent 8 equivalent residential units. So that's how we've used it to scale up for all the different meter sizes. So we took the capacity and broke it down to a cost per ERU, and then we know that based on the flow rate capacities in the meters, how to scale that up for the larger meter sizes.
And where does that 300 gallon per day come from?
The 300, I think that was from the city's level of service.
The current level of service for the sewer system.
So planning
figure. Our current capacity.
Basically the current capacity per equivalent residential unit that we currently see.
Yeah. What is that? Is that an average or what does that mean?
Isn't that correct? Didn't you take the total flow to the...
Well, we use the 300 as the conversion, so I'm trying to go back, Kyle, to get you the source for the 300.
At the beginning, you had a typical customer you described as using 500.
Yes. So, in my mind, the way that we're using that in this particular calculation is you've built a system and you have, from your level of service, defined that for each residential connection, we're allocating 300 gallons on a daily basis of usage for each residential connection. So it's essentially like a factoring for the investments you've made of how much we're reserving for each connection.
Right. Well, I mean, that's driving a lot of this calculation, so I'm wondering
FY20 average monthly flow.
I'm sorry?
Fiscal year 20 average monthly flow was what we used to calculate the 300
average per home? Or
yep. Average? So system average, yep, for 300 gallons a day.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So. So maybe your first slide should reflect the 300, that number, instead of the 500?
So the system average is a little bit higher than where your like median bill would be. So that 5 CCF, that's where you have a very common number of bills issued. So we'd use the average to come up with what's the system average for an equivalent units, but then when we do the bill impacts, we actually run them at all, and one of your more typical bills was issued for 500 cubic feet.
So you've got this escalation factor in here, so are you proposing adjusting this for inflation every year?
So the escalation factor that's right here is the fact that the asset roll that we looked at and the data that we got was 1 year in arrear. So this just brings into the current day dollars by inflating 5%.
Right. So is that, I mean, but are you proposing doing that every year to, or?
No, what we would recommend, I think at this point in time, would you to, for the city to consider truing this up to the current cost. And then on an ongoing basis, you'll oftentimes do studies in order to ensure that this is trued up from time to time and incorporates all the latest investment information that goes into it. So we're not recommending this time, though, a yearly inflator, if you will. Mm-hmm.
So that net system value is that 223 number up there. That's an older number?
That's the latest number that we have from your fixed asset data.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
From fiscal year 20.
Mm-hmm.
Fiscal year 20. Okay. Yeah. Would it be possible to, I mean, we just finished fiscal year 21, so would it be, so maybe we could look at an update on that.
That's why we did the 5% to try to account for it, just because of a timing perspective.
Well, yeah, I'm saying we should have actual numbers instead of just guessing at 5%, right?
Yeah. Okay. Depending upon the status of closeout activities, we might. Mm-hmm.
So I'll pause for a minute, because I'm going to move on to solid waste. So if there's anything else on the sewer side of the equation that we want to go back through or talk through, I'm happy to do that real quick. Otherwise, I'll move into solid waste.
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
You've got, when you're doing solid waste, you have your fixed cost and your volumetric cost.
On the sewer?
On the sewer. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we just finished?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you're recommending that we decrease the fixed cost?
Fixed cost recovery. Mm-hmm.
How do you figure that? I mean, why would we decrease the fixed cost?
Yeah.
How do you figure that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So the way we figure that is we're using the exact same methodology the city currently has in place. And we've just gone through a process in a line item detail looking at all of the expenditures and allocating between fixed cost and volumetric. And what we're finding is that we can support 37% of the cost to be recovered on the fixed side. So we're recommending the city true up to that particular number. Right now it's a little bit higher at 42. I wouldn't say this is a big change. It's a relatively minor change that would bring in a very similar level of fixed cost recovery. But now we have all of the supporting analysis that goes into this particular figure based on your most updated cost.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I would think that what you're calling the fixed cost, which I would probably call the per customer cost, would be a lot lower than 37%. I mean, everything. If you first of all take out the expansion cost, which we just talked about, the connection fees, then what you're left with is costs that should be charged equally to every customer, which would be the flat rate on everybody's sewer bill, which I would think would be billing, metering, customer service, and then everything else, all of the providing the sewer service and the maintenance of the system should be charged per CCF. And you're saying that fixed cost, that per customer cost, amounts to 37%?
Yeah, here's a big part of it. So the debt service up here is the first one we started with. So that's going to be ongoing payments the city has to make, right? Even if there's no usage on the system in a given year, hypothetically. You've got to make those principal and interest payments. And what we're truing up is we're adding that in, and we're adding 50% of the cash funded capital, because additionally, you've got to make a lot of investments on the system so that it stands by ready to receive and provide service, right? Now, we're recommending those fixed charges not equal per connection as well. It actually scales, right? The larger the size of the connection is, many of these fixed investments are based on capacity.
So this is a bit of a difference than electric, again, whereas electric, you would have that customer charge, oftentimes separate, then you may have a demand component on the bill, and then a per kilowatt hour charge, and then maybe you've got a power cost adjustment factor. In the water resources billing, you generally will have a two-part fee structure, fixed and variable. And the fixed oftentimes will include these capacity type cost components. Whether it's 100% of these items or some portion of them, there's a bit of a balance that every community can look at about what level of cost recovery in their fixed fees is resulting in, you know, fixed costs that are comparable to others, or fixed charges, I should say, and that's providing enough revenue stability to, again, comport with your policy objectives.
The debt service there that you're allocating to the fixed cost,
mm-hmm.
that's debt related to previous system expansions, presumably?
For a number of things. It could be renewals and replacements. But again, we're deducting from that, if you go back, Kyle, miscellaneous revenues. So what revenue we get from connection fees, we're deducting from the amount that we're including in the fixed charges. So any revenue we get to go against some of these costs from other miscellaneous fees that we have, we're deducting that before we calculate the final fee schedules.
But it still seems to me that debt service would be more equitably allocated per CCF of usage, so that customers that are using the system more are paying more of the debt service and customers that are using it less, rather than allocating it equally to every customer.
Yeah, I think with the water system in particular, you know, I think that logic is, you know, pretty consistently held in the industry that makes some sense. When you have to design water treatment plants based on maximum day components, you have to consider things like fire protection and those peak hour instantaneous flows, you know, and sometimes that's also associated with outdoor irrigation use that peaks the system in the summer. But if we think about the sewer system, it's generally more steady demands, right? There's not necessarily as much peaking component to it. And so what we have to come back to is, again, some things that came from Public Law 92500 in the 70s or 80s about proportional. And the most, you know, consistent way that that's done is through usage on the system, but that's also expressed through usage on those fixed capacity fees. So we're scaling all these fees based upon their flow capacity. So we're using flow to scale these fixed charges by meter size based on potential demands that those meters could have. And then we're taking the maintenance costs, and those are coming through in the variable charges. So we're trying to stay within those proportionality requirements. And so whether you have them in the usage rates or have them in the fixed fee, so long as they're getting scaled by those larger capacities, we're really trying to get those costs to the right users that can place those demands on the system.
Mr. Pitzer.
So, you know, when we issue debt, you know, we usually have a series of associated rate increases to go along with it to pay for the debt. Do you go back and look at whether those rate increases were appropriate and actually covered the cost of that debt over some period of time?
That's interesting. So what we'll do is historically we'll grab, usually it's 5 years or so of actual performance data for revenues and expenses and for capital spending, so that we can do a few different things. Look at actual results versus budgets to see what level of conservatism, you know, what we have in there, where there might be trends in terms of significant items exceeding or being below budget, trends on capital expenditure spend rates and those sorts of things. And what we'll generally then see is look at fund balance and how has fund balance trended over time also during that same time periods. And so there's always a degree of Monday morning quarterbacking that could occur through that process, but we're generally looking for trends, you know, and things that to us would be, you know, things that we need to look out for and immediately address. Like Kyle pointed out on the revenue versus expenses, we have adequate reserves right now and we have time to adjust that. But if we see, you know, patterns of declining levels of reserves because expenses consistently exceeded expenses, that could be something that would be a flag. But in this case, we've seen responsible use of reserves for capital funding. So there's not necessarily anything here that we would say, gosh, we should have done differently other than maybe done some just minor inflationary adjustments the last couple of years where right. we didn't do them.
Okay, yeah, because sometimes we talk about a rate increase associated with the cost of debt and a rate, a rate increase to cover operating costs.
Exactly.
And so, but you're not really getting into that nuance where you're allocating that cost to one or the other.
Yeah, the nuance that we got into there was the split between fixed and variable, and then what we say is going forward, we need to have our revenue stream keep up with our expenditures.
Right.
And if we look at the degree of escalation on capital versus O&M, they're pretty similar, but we didn't specifically break them out between each component.
And could you go back to that slide where you showed the one more, I think, or sorry, the one, yeah, there you go. So that cash funded capital that goes across fixed and volumetric, you know, so how do you allocate capital projects funded through debt versus capital projects funded through operating cash?
So what we did is when we went through this process, we looked at the capital improvement program and identified those capital improvement projects that were really recurring in nature. So versus ones that were more one time and that could be funded from other revenue sources. And we wanted to make sure that our fixed fees were going to cover the debt and those ongoing renewals and replacements that we were consistently making in like the underground infrastructure for line replacements or line rehab. So we wanted to make sure that recurring level of capital spend plus the debt, those recurring capital expenses, were what was being captured in the fixed charge component. And then the variable component of the capital cost that could fluctuate, maybe were growth dependent or more infrequent items that weren't recurring in nature, those are what we put into the variable charges.
Okay, so for instance, a maintenance project on the existing system that's financed through debt would be which?
Okay. And I think I can help with this for a second. Right now, in the current financial plan going out, there are no additional debt issuances, so it's all cash funded.
We have reallocated debt proceeds that were to be for expansion to more maintenance type projects on the existing system. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to conceptualize in my head how that is reflected in your rate recommendations.
I see. I think fundamentally what we're trying to do is capture all debt service, regardless of whether it was for renewal and replacement or expansion, because that represents a fixed capital investment cost that we have to repay. We're obligated to repay that debt. So we wanted to recover that in the fixed charge, as well as recurring annual capital that we need to maintain the system. And so those were the two primary drivers for what we would put into the fixed cost. And then that's really how we came up with that split. And it worked out to be about 50-50 on the math of how that cash-funded capital would be split going forward.
Okay, because I guess I could make almost the opposite argument that you're making, that more of those costs should be in what you're calling the fixed cost bucket, because they're to maintain the existing system.
Good.
Should be, you know, allocated to existing users.
There's very opposite ends of the spectrum that you could take relative to philosophies on the capital funding. What we have here is really consistent with the study that was done several years ago as well, in terms of how we were putting cost into the fixed versus variable components, which was, again, trying to make sure that we kept really that 37% target in mind, because that was a pretty important component. The rating agencies will look at things like that, revenue stability, how much revenue you can capture in your fixed cost and your fixed charges, and they recognize that you can't capture 100% of your fixed costs, because otherwise there's a consequence there from affordability. You'd have fixed fees that are just really very high, and it would cause, you know, some burdens, you know, for those very low volume users.
Right.
So there is a degree of art here that, you know, does need to have you know, your input and, you know, policy perspectives into it. But we've been largely consistent with what's been done in the past in industry practice.
I've got two other points, and I'll try to be brief.
Actually, could I just respond to the point you just made? So you feel that the maintenance of the existing system should be charged equally to every customer, irrespective of how much use they make of the system?
Well, a certain component that allows the system to remain functional, yeah.
It either works or it doesn't for everybody.
But people using the system more are more responsible for the need for more maintenance. So I think that those maintenance costs should be prorated by how much people use the system, which is measured by how many CCF they put out.
Well, but you could also, I mean, but you could take that to, you know, almost an absurd extreme, where you're saying, okay, well, you know, why should a customer on a newer system that doesn't need maintenance, why should they be, you know, paying for maintenance of an older part of the system, for example. So, I mean, it's an entire system that, like you said, either works or it doesn't. And, you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, maybe there's a portion of it, right? And, I mean, that's kind of what we're arguing about, right, is what that portion should be.
So we're over halfway out of time, but not quite halfway out of slides.
Okay.
So you've got two things, and I've got a question, too, before we leave sewer.
So that initial diagnostics slide that you had, would it be, you know, so you've got the 20 and 20, could we see the updated numbers for the end of fiscal year 21 to see where we actually are?
So, in this particular one, I believe we had very close to the 21 actuals in here, because we were able to get them in as we finalized the study.
Okay, so the 20 are the 20 were, okay. So you feel like...
We're close. Obviously, the audited financial is not completely done.
Right.
We didn't have that information at the time we finalized this, but we're very close to where 21 ended.
Okay. I'm just a little surprised. I mean, 21 was a good year financially, you know, so I'm surprised to see that dip in the fund balance.
To a certain extent, a lot of this is the programmatic capital investments, the cash-funded capital.
Yeah. Okay.
So it may be sitting on the books, but not yet spent on those capital. It could be a timing issue.
Yeah, okay. And my other question, it may be too long to get into, but and tell me if we don't have time for it. But, you know, I was comparing your slide on the that had all of the monthly bills, you know, across all the municipalities.
Yes, the peer survey.
Yeah, the peer survey. You know, for the monthly bills and also for the connection fees. I was kind of looking at those two side by side, and you had some cities that were, you know, had high connection fees and low monthly charges, or the reverse. You know, and so Columbia, you know, we're on, you know, one extreme in terms of having a high connection fee, and then we're kind of in the lower third for the monthly bill. You know, if you got like Moberly and Boone County have lower connection fees, but here they've got really high monthly fees. But then you've got some, I looked at like St. Peter's, I saw Jefferson City, they've got really low connection fees and really low monthly bills. So
how do they do
why?
That?
So you'll never in this chart be able to get to an apples to apples. This is one of the things I said, and you're exactly right. There are always nuances the minute you open the hood on any one of these communities, because they're all in a different life cycle of when they've increased rates over the last. So some have set up a connection fee but never updated it for 10, 15 years. It's going to be really low. There is somewhat of a zero-sum game. If you charge really low on the new connections, you've got to recover that somewhere. I mean, we need the money overall. But there are going to be substantial differences. You know, density, economies of scale, there are a lot of things that go into exactly why the rates sit where they are on this particular survey. So I think it's intended to be informational, but there are very different conclusions you could draw from the individual experiences of a given community.
I'd say two big things typically are timing, when they've made their capital investments. Some have not done them, and then they've let them accumulate, and then they have to play catch up. And so we'll see that sometimes cycle through, so that they start off at the low end, then you go 5 or 6 years down the road, and then they're at the higher end because they've had to adjust their rates because they haven't done that proactively or consistently. The second is alternative funding sources. So some may be using other mechanisms to recover some of their cost. It could be dollars from their general funds. It could be other funding sources. Local option sales taxes could be how they use grant monies that they've been able to secure. So alternative funding sources also will be probably the other driver, I would say, that will come into play here quite a bit. That could be an explanatory variable. Those are usually the two big ones.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's something I'd like to, you know, kind of understand more and see if what we're doing is reasonable, or if there's, you know, or other ideas or for, you know, solutions that are out there.
Can you go back to slide eight, please?
Was that the diagnostic?
Yeah, one more. So I see where our target cash reserve is, and without any rate increases, the fund balance falls below the target. Now go to the next slide. Why are we overfunding the target cash reserve amount?
You're talking about when we get to the very far out years here?
Yeah, by three times the money.
Yeah, so the best way to think about this is, you know, we have a really good idea with our crystal ball here the next 5 years, right? When we get out here, we have a forecasting period. This is the current capital investments on the system in the green bars. What you are seeing here is, to a certain extent, this gap that shows up in the last few years. So my suspicion, as you move forward, you will layer in additional capital projects here. Those bars will continue to come down. So we're showing likely an indexing plan of 3%. It does, exactly as you mentioned, show some reserves increasing in the out years. I would not take that super to heart as a you know, ironclad projection that far into the future. It is likely in my mind that there will be some changes as you roll forward and update this type of an analysis.
Does that assume the capacity to do more capital projects than staff has accomplished in the past?
I guess the way I would phrase it, or the way I would think about it, is you've kind of got a black line here with your average spending over this time. What we're just showing is in the current plan, it's a little bit below average in those last few. So you definitely could increase some capital funding here if this all played out exactly as it's projected in these last few years, and those bars would come down a little bit.
And the next line, is that it? Okay. All right, let's move on.
Absolutely. All right, on to solid waste. So on to solid waste, just like I started off the last one, as we intro into it, you're providing a fundamental service to the community. In fiscal year 22, there's roughly $7.8 million of personnel expenses, $15.9 of operations, and $3.8 million in capital. What we have done is very similar to the last utility we looked at in solid waste. We've run a diagnostic view of the model here. We've got no future rate increases currently projected over the next 10 years. In this particular case, again, looking at the black line, which is our policy target, with no rate increases, we're showing the solid waste fund has very little excess reserves, meaning that by 2024, the fund would be substantially without any reserves on a go-forward basis, and the slope would show it would go below zero going forward. And so in that particular case, that would not be sustainable. We have then gone ahead and calculated a plan that would be sustainable on a go-forward basis. What this shows is 7.5% for the next two fiscal years, again, April 1st of 2022 for the first implementation. 7.55 and then 3 after that would bring you back into alignment. So your revenues and expenditures would start to match on an ongoing basis, fund balance would stabilize, and we would not have the result that we just saw. The only other bigger project that I'm going to mention that's out here is in fiscal year 2026. You have an expansion of phase 2 of the material recovery facility. We've currently got that put in here. It's a very large capital project, so it's showing some debt funding in there. As you get closer to that, the amount of debt funding that you may do on that will change, but we've currently got that projected in there. And so that gives you a kind of an update of the most current projection of what we see on solid waste, if you will. 7.5 in the near term, followed by 7.5, and then you could get to a very inflationary level. Outside of the revenue sufficiency on solid waste, it's a lot more detailed than what we just went through on sewer. So there's a lot more individualized services that you provide to customers depending on exactly what they're looking for. So up in the big pillars here, I've got the fundamental functions you're providing. So we're collecting refuse, recycling material. We're then going to bring it over for either material processing or we're going to bring it to a disposal function at the very end here. Then going down horizontally, I have all of the individual functions between residential curbside collection, front load, rear load, roll off, landfill, and then the community improvement district. And so as we go through the next slides, we'll be talking about the individual updates to each of the rates to apply to those different services. What we have gone through those, first and foremost, had very detailed discussions with city staff and subject matter experts in order to identify the cost in the current budget year of providing each one of these services, which is really the foundation of this next analysis I'll go through.
Did the residential curbside figure the cost we have or the cost of services we want?
This is based on your current fiscal year 22 budget. It's, if you will, an x-ray of your current expenditures.
So it's 100% of the residential recycling cost or 50%?
These are millions. Over here?
Yeah.
So this is $10.5 million to provide residential curbside.
But a residential recycling, $3.5 million for?
The cost of it, to run the program.
Cost.
So Dave, is that for every week or every 2 weeks?
Is that for?
That's annually.
No, the service.
So the service.
What's, what service level?
Weekly service with that money?
Yes, we could.
Okay, that's what they're asking.
Yes.
Okay.
What we have done in this cost of service is now in orange, I'm showing the individualized cost of service provided that you require to provide the service. We've got the increase built in for a 7.5% increase, and we're contrasting this against the gray bars, which is the current revenue we're collecting by service line. Most of these are relatively in alignment. So there's an overall need for a little bit more revenue, so the orange bars are always going to be a little bit higher if everything was equalized. There are two I want to point your attention to because it'll be very clear as we go through the next phrase that these are going to be a little bit higher. So in the landfill, that gap is a little bit higher than the 7.5 that we're talking about the overall needs of that rate. When we go to calculate, it's going to show a little bit more pressure under the hood to get the cost of service. The exact same is true over here on the Community Improvement District. The gap between current revenues, the cost to provide that service, is one of the larger gaps that we identified in this particular analysis. So when I go to calculate rates and show you those, these are the two you will see the larger impacts on from that standpoint because of the underlying gap between cost of service and revenues currently.
Can I just ask what Community Improvement District is?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a map up in a second we'll go to, but it is fundamentally there is a special service area in the downtown core where there are shared containers for refuse and for recycling, and they have their own specific rates that go along with it.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Question about landfill. It's the one that looks different from the rest. It's not a service to customers, which each of those other ones is. There's a customer base for each of those. Seems like the landfill costs should be allocated among the different customers.
That's a great point. That's a wonderful point. So it is fundamentally allocated to these other service lines in proportion to their use. What this reflects is the remainder. Oftentimes I refer to this as cell phone, where folks are going out to the actual landfill and dropping off material. They're getting weighed on the scale, and they're getting charged proportionally that. Additionally, roll-off also comes in here. They get charged on the weight for that particular services at the scale house. And so those are those particular remainder costs that a service.
And the roll-off is there.
That's the roll-off, the cost of the pull. And then when you actually get weighed, you have a landfill cost
you
based on disposal.
Additional being put on.
But we'll go through those nuances. It's a great point, great observation up front. So I put this chart together. I will not go through this in every level of detail. What I wanted to do is to put this up to give you an understanding of the depth of the analysis that we went through in this particular study. Each one of these service lines is very detailed in understanding the personnel, the apparatus the city is using in order to provide service, and we were able to go through and track those through the course of this study so we could get very individualized understanding of not only the cost, but then also what billing units do we need to pull out of your billing units to ensure that we're getting the correct chargeable units and tracking those service units very closely to the way that you're providing the service. So now I'll go through and just show you some of the fundamental updates in the calculated rates that are coming out from the solid waste. On the residential side of the equation, you have three rates that are in place currently. I'll start in the middle. So the middle is your traditional curbside, most commonly thought of as a single family. And this particular one, it's $17.37 right now per month. The calculation here is showing up to $18, which is roughly a 3.6% increase. Now there are two other rates that are in place for residential. So they're both gonna be central collection. These are typically multi-family type dwelling units under these two rates. Right now, this one over here, the single account, has a bit of a discount that's applied to it. So you can see one is $15.72, one is $15.47. During the course of our study, we can't support that particular discount that's being applied there. So our recommendation is to bring parity between these two different central collection rates. What that'll mean is this one will have to come up a little bit more so that it comes to the full cost of service currently, because the service here is fundamentally identical between the two. So what we're recommending is to move to $16.30 on both of those, which will mean for the accounts that have an individual bill going out to each customer, it'll be 3.7, but if it's got a central account, it's a little bit higher at 5.5%. So simplification in that particular case. What we've done next is much like we did on sewer. We pulled some peer providers in of solid waste services. This is a single family home for the curbside service. You can see the $17.37, very close to the average. The recommendation will put you in the very same place on the survey as $18 and slightly under the average here. Many of these communities are very similar, with the one outlier of Lee Summit off to the right, particularly in this case. And again, my one caveat is everybody has a little bit of different level of service here. They also have different systems. Some own a landfill, some don't own a landfill or a material recovery facility. So there are different costs underneath the hood here for each community as well.
Do any of them have a bag system?
Some don't. A question that was on the community improvement district. So that's our next one up. I put a map over here to the left. The city's code of ordinance spells out very clearly how these rates are calculated and defines customer classes. I've put over here to the right all of your current rates that are in place. They are defined in ordinance as either large, medium, or small. We did a pretty detailed analysis on this from a couple different angles. So we calculated the cost of service that I mentioned, and we found there's a pretty big gap between revenues and expenditures. Now that gap refines a little bit more as you look at the individual types of customers. So residential is actually a decrease. They're currently a little over $19. We're recommending they go to the rate that was calculated for residential service, down to $16.30. The big changes in rates here are going to be on your commercial customers, where there's a large gap between what they're currently being charged, what the cost of service is. We actually took this a step further, and what we did for many of these customers is we looked at similar industries outside of this zone and what they're paying for monthly service so that we could ensure that these updated rates were very similar to what you'd be charged if you're that standalone business receiving service. And we feel that many of these updates will put them very much on par with what they would receive if they were outside the community improvement district. So again, these are going to be some of the larger rate increases that we've calculated here, but this is really truing these folks up to the underlying cost to provide that service in this area.
And the reason that we have a special kind of set of prices for the CID is because of the density of the buildings, what the available ways that we can do solid waste?
So there might be some more history behind this. The big part that I would point to from a rate perspective is that they have shared containers. And so the
right.
containers are not one container to one business.
Right.
It's going to be a container where multiple people that are in proximity can use that facility.
But similar businesses outside the CID would each have their own accounts.
That's correct.
So it's the shared accounts.
Or the individual containers outside the CID.
And then there's their own accounts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the
everybody in the CID has an individual account, but they share.
Shared.
I see. Okay, they still have individual accounts, right. But they're all structured as one through one agreement with the CID.
Yeah, that's in the code.
Chapter 22. Yeah.
But basically what this study's shown is that it costs more to provide the service in the CID than
we're charging
currently, and it's more of how do we want to address it moving forward.
So roll-off rates I'll go into next. This rate, you have particularly two types of way you provide this service. So one is a full size, a large container. You have a certain amount of apparatus and personnel that goes with that. That full size rate, what we have calculated is actually an increase in that rate of roughly 11.9% or 1208. This is importantly for the pull. So this is the fact that you're picking up and transporting the container. They will then pay a separate charge for the actual disposal of the material at the landfill. In addition to the full size, the city also provides a miniature size, which is a much smaller size. Different type of service, different apparatus, personnel. What we're actually showing that one is the flip of the equation. So to true that one up to the cost of service, it's actually a decrease in that pull rate. So it's currently $72.13 per pull. We're calculating at $55.92 for that particular rate. So again, just truing this up to the underlying cost that it costs the city to provide the services here. So commercial rear load and recycling, so these are your predominant commercial services where you've got a large container out there. Currently the city has two different schedules for services, whether you're either front load or the rear load. What we're recommending as part of this study is a simplification here. And so that distinction between front load and rear load is really fundamentally made at the solid waste level based on the location of the container and the type of container that they need to put there in order to render service at the location. It's not fundamentally a customer decision. So what we're recommending is we actually combine these two schedules of services to one schedule that would be front load commercial. And we have gone through the detailed process to understand the changes in the frequency of the container pickup. So it's an a la carte menu here for these particular ones where the customer sizes the service to what they need as far as how much frequency and how big the container is. We've done a very detailed analysis to look at how that pricing, that unit costing for capacity goes up as the container size gets bigger and as we increase frequency. So this particular table right here shows you the impact. And I've got arrows going up or down depending on if the rates change from where it currently is. The important part here is there's a lot of variation between your commercial customer base of what type of service they're getting from the city, how many containers they have, and at what frequency. So everyone will have a little bit of an individualized rate impact here, but this will greatly simplify the administration of these rates for this particular type of service you're providing. So landfill tonnage rate is the next one up on the plate. What the landfill tonnage is again kind of a self-haul function in this particular display where someone's bringing material to the landfill. They get weighed and charged for the disposal of that material. Right now it's at $55 per ton. The cost of service is going to be $64.09 per ton. So this is an increase. As I mentioned, when we looked at cost of service, one of the larger gaps we found where the rate would need to move up in order to recover the full cost of this particular service. Any questions on solid waste as we've gone through it? If we want to go back to it, let's move on to stormwater.
Why no connection fee for solid waste? Or if we think of it as a public infrastructure expansion fee, the amount of additional one-time infrastructure costs as we, say, double the population.
You know, I haven't seen too many solid waste capacity fees. Where I have, it's been like waste-to-energy facilities. So where they have significant investment in capital infrastructure as opposed to, say, landfills, where, you know, ultimately you have to plan ahead for cell expansions, you have to plan ahead for, you know, your post-closure care activities. And so it's a little bit different unless you have a major physical asset like a waste energy facility, and even then it's, I've only seen a handful of those.
So your feeling is that that cost, if you calculated it, would be very small in our system and not really worth
exactly
collecting.
It'd be more akin, I'm thinking of like a police or a fire impact fee, where it's going to be largely more vehicle based.
Well, as a matter of fact, we are building new fire stations every few years, and they cost about $3 million.
Exactly. So we do see,
and
like,
we don't have a public infrastructure expansion.
Yeah, we do see public safety impact fees typically for fire stations, mm-hmm. sometimes for police, mm-hmm. like headquarters and equipment sets and vehicles, those sorts of things. But just generally don't see them on solid waste, just not as much capital.
Yeah. Okay.
Infrastructure.
Thanks. Yeah, I would say that, and I think when we have looked at calculating, when communities ask us, I think the other hardest thing is the service isn't as uniform. I say, like a sewer, we talk about where everyone's getting the same level of service.
It's harder.
Commercial can be really different to spread up that capital cost and try to allocate it, and they may change, right? They may want one frequency and container size and then call up next week, no, let's change it, and so it can be really variable on that side.
Thanks, you've got about 9 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Stormwater's going to be much smaller, so I think we can get through. So on stormwater, we'll start off with what is the cost to manage rain that hits the city system. What we've got is personnel cost of roughly $800,000 a year, $1.6 million in operating, $1.8 million in capital on the stormwater side. We have updated a financial model, a standalone model for the stormwater system. In this particular case, so this is the diagnostic run of this model, and so we're not showing any future rate increases calculated. What this displays is, on an ongoing basis, the level of forecasted capital investments as well as personnel and expenditure would be sustainable given the current revenues of the system. Now, I'll make one caveat there, as there is a stormwater management plan that's out there in the future. And so the results of studies like that that do a comprehensive look could potentially change the magnitude and timing of investments here. And so if those changes were going to be much higher or much more sooner than what this currently shows, that might potentially change this particular outlook. But given the picture that we have currently and the best data, this looks sustainable on a go-forward basis for a number of years. What we did on the stormwater rate design is there are several different things required to look into that. And so up here we've got the basis, the revenue requirement, that's how much money we need each year. That's our fundamental numerator. The denominator from a stormwater side is oftentimes impervious area. So looking at measurements of the hard surfaces on developed properties throughout the city, to understand that the more you pave oftentimes, that impacts the stormwater system in a much more heavier degree, and that is oftentimes the unit of measurement that stormwater systems use to allocate cost and come up with rates. So the application is typically on a monthly charge and scale by that particular impervious area, and you do have fees currently in place for stormwater. However, when we looked at this particular impervious area, the collection of that data is still fundamentally in progress. So the database that currently exists is not currently up to date or comprehensive in its impervious area. And so we're unable, as part of this study, to integrate that data and come up with new stormwater rates. What we did, however, do is look and have discussions, and this is actually Columbia's data right here, these pictures, of what you define as impervious area. So as the city goes through the step of updating that analysis and collecting it, we're grabbing a uniform picture of impervious area in each parcel. So this shows things like building area, you know, parking lots that are on private property, as well as compacted dirt can be looked at as impervious area that's fundamentally impacting either the runoff quantity the city's receiving or the quality of that runoff to the stormwater system, and things that you would want to have captured in an impervious database that's shown here in GIS so that we could do rate work on it and come up with updated rates that may include different types of structures to more equitably spread the cost of stormwater services on a go-forward basis. So what we did is, as we've highlighted in this particular study, a 15-month plan to integrate that data. It's going to take a bit of an effort on the city side in order to do the geographic analysis that is required to get there. And so that's really fundamentally going parcel by parcel and updating that impervious footprint, drawing those polygons that I just showed you so that we can then have those measurements for each utility billing account of how much impervious area they have, and then plug that into a rate analysis so that we can come up with proposed and updated rates. We think with that analysis will likely take 6 to 7 months,
And then there could be additional steps that would happen behind it to look at alternative structures for stormwater rates that then could be implemented at some point in the future. But as it stands right now, that fundamental data collection is going to be the step that needs to occur in order for the stormwater rates to be updated.
Can I just jump in really quickly? In the state of Missouri, that does require a vote of the people, just so that I just want the council to be
yes.
aware that that would require a vote. You need a vote.
Yes, for any rate changes, absolutely.
Well, and particularly to move to an impervious surface calculation.
Yes.
It's a Hancock issue.
Yes. It would. Thank you very much. What we have done, though, is put together a peer survey of the stormwater rate. You have a few different rates for residential right now. I put in the most common here, which is $337 per month. What this shows is you're on the left side of this particular survey. Not every community has a standalone stormwater fee, so we did kind of extend this survey out a little bit to grab a few different municipalities, even outside the state, that have a standalone stormwater fee. You can see off to the right, there are some that have quite a bit higher on a monthly basis for these particular fees. Again, the caveats I've mentioned whenever we compare these, there are oftentimes, especially on the stormwater side, very big differences on when people have put in a fee and how they've adjusted it over time. So just quickly, in summary, I put this slide together. Kind of executive summary, Andy mentioned this up front. For your residential customer, the kind of kitchen table effect, oftentimes a customer doesn't necessarily look at all the different lines, but the real idea is how does this change overall at the average usage level? It's $45.86 currently, it's $47.75 with all of the updates we've talked about for sewer and for solid waste on April 1st in 2022, which is $1.89 or a 4.12% increase in the monthly fee for your average residential customer. Commercial customers will have a little bit of difference depending on their solid waste services they have, depending on the particular usage that they have for sewer as well. So just a recommendation of summary, the summary of the analysis that we've conducted, we have recommended a number of changes for the level of revenue on the sewer and the solid waste side to collect on an annual basis, as well as an underlying distribution cost of service for each of those services to ensure that you've got good proportionality between the way that customers use your services and the way that you collect the revenue associated with providing those services. Additionally, we did a detailed analysis of the district customers, their usage of the sewer system. We would recommend over time, it's not something you can do immediately, but over time, updating that rate multiplier. Currently it's at 0.8 up to the full 0.92 with that difference between the fixed and the volumetric component as well. Additionally, the connection fee, updating that to full cost recovery so that any new connection on the sewer would fully recover the increment of cost that the city has made in the system to provide those services. The last one's just on the stormwater side to collect the impervious area so that that would be available in the future in order to provide for updated stormwater rates and analysis. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, but happy to jump into anything else on the stormwater side we want to revisit.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any discussion by council?
I'm interested in knowing, Dave, on the stormwater. It's my understanding that there's an enormous number of fairly important stormwater projects that need to be done that are far off in the distance on the CIP because of a lack of revenue in the utility. Is that correct?
Well, there's a large number of projects that need to be done that are that are out in the future, and you know it'd be nice to accelerate them time-wise.
I mean, I get calls from people who are getting flooded several times a year,
and
I talk to your staff, and they say, okay, right, fiscal 2029, we're going to get to that.
This combination, it was at one time funding related when we didn't have enough money to do work. Now we have funding, we need more staff to be able to get the work completed.
So we don't need to increase rates?
Not at this point in time.
So we can bring some of those projects that are in fiscal 29 forward to fiscal 25 or something if we just can hire enough engineers?
If we had enough staff to do the work, yes.
Wow. Well, that's good news, I suppose. We just have to.
But right now, right now we have one engineer in stormwater.
But that hopefully is just a short-term issue.
Well, it wasn't very many years ago that we didn't have any engineering staff in the stormwater division, and that was all being put onto sewer utility division staff to perform stormwater work.
So I just can't find staff?
Right now, we're having difficulty finding staff for all positions.
Well, I realize that, but I thought that was a short-term situation.
We can hope.
It's been going on a while now.
Okay. But if you find staff, then the CIP
could be revised. If we had more staff, we could theoretically get more work completed.
Forward. Okay.
Matt, check.
I can give you my thoughts. Is that what you're asking? So I mean, I agree. I would like to see the stormwater work, you know, accelerated. And I know that's a staffing issue. But, you know, it's good to, I mean, the funding is there, so, you know, and there are a lot of projects. Solid waste, you know, I'm not in favor of asking people to pay more for something they don't want. On the sewer, you know, I've got more questions and some more work that I would like to either do or get some information on. I'd like to understand why, like, our connection fee is so much higher than the rest of the state. And what's driving that. And then I want to go back and look at, you know, sort of, you know, our current, you know, financial situation. I'd also like to, you know, understand, you know, how, you know, the capital project funding, you know, that you guys, you know, sort of mapped out over the next 5 years, you know, how have we done over the last, you know, 5 years, say, in terms of you know, completing those projects and spending those, you know, budgeted capital project dollars. You know, feels to me like it might be a little bit aggressive. I don't have the data here with me, but, you know, and that's driving a lot of, you know, the requirement for additional revenue in the next several years.
I've got similar concerns and reticence about increasing rates on sewer and solid waste. I mean, I noticed in your written report, you recommend that Boone County Regional Sewer District customers should be assessed a connection fee and then that we adjust the multiplier, but you haven't included any of that revenue in your rate calculations because you say it would take a couple of years to negotiate that rate. I mean, we can adjust the multiplier with 180 days notice in our current agreement, and I think as a component of that, we look at connection fees to help offset some of the costs. I mean, it just doesn't seem fair that our ratepayers are paying 100% of the cost for these projects, and people who don't live in the city limits get to tap into it for free whenever they want to. So I cannot support any proposed increase until we fix that. And on the solid waste side, I mean, I agree. We need to figure out what we want that system to look like, not how we pay for the system we have.
And on that topic, the roll call people say they have the number of signatures. They are getting extra to account for the fact that the first signatures were 2 years ago. But, I mean, that could become an option middle of next year.
And the resolution for that, obviously, that will be the first step in the resolution of that, but it will also have to be a public referendum. And then we'll know the answer to that question as to how many people do like or don't like the current system. Because I don't know how, it's probably changed since that was tested, but I don't know the extent to which that's changed.
And presumably, if we were to switch to a roll cart system, all of this would be sort of irrelevant. We need to do it again.
Yeah, this would be only based on your current cost.
Yeah.
Comments?
Well, there's a lot to
digest. Would you all like to see a rate increase package on the council agenda to discuss, or would you like for staff to do some more work and answer some of these very important questions? More work. Betsy, you disagree?
No.
I think we need to recover costs. Yeah, we need to do it in the fairest possible way.
From all users.
Absolutely.
Right. What do you recommend, John?
I'm concerned about the sewer side, for sure. Uh-huh. Solid waste, it depends on what you want to do with the system. I mean, you're going to have to do something with the system sometime. So you got to cross that bridge. But the sewer, uh,
if this
I
counts,
see what you're saying on the 92%. I understand that.
I mean, why wouldn't, I mean, I went back and looked at Tom Roderman's letter to us, who said, we have the right to adjust the multiplier, provide us the documentation.
Yeah.
For
this
that,
is documentation.
Why would we immediately notify them that effective July 1, 2022, their multiplier is now 92%?
I just notified them we're going to have discussions on it. They're in a meeting right now talking about it. So
all right.
They've been put on notice.
And then I don't know, I didn't reread their contract or the current agreement from 1996. I don't know if it's silent on connection fees or if that could be part of it as well.
I guess I'd just like to think about this. I mean, this was certainly a rapid run through of all this, and so I need to now sit down and understand what it was you just spoke about for the last hour and a half. So I guess I'd like to think about it and bring it back in January sometime.
Is that prior to the 2014 sewer cost of service? Is that available on the website or somewhere?
If it's not, I can get it. I can get it on there or send it out through the city manager's office.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
John.
I'm just going to caution any rate increases or any type of thing before April.
Yeah.
I'm not inclined to.
Will jeopardize your waiver.
I'm not.
That's true.
I don't see any support on this.
I'm sort of thinking that I might have to have a few more quiet conversations with people. I'll talk to Matt.
What's that? I don't think anybody wants to do this right now.
So, one more question. On the sewer, if we were to increase that county contribution from 80% to 92%, is that going to make any significant difference to how much we need to spend on it? Given the.
It's 200.
Yeah, that's what I think. I haven't talked to John.
$20,000 a year.
$20 million annual revenue, it's maybe a percent.
Just ask John.
But so would that reduce the rate increase you would be recommending if we actually start planting that?
5.1%.
I see. Okay. So from, is it 4% to
3%? The overall increase was 6.5% for the sewer revenue, so if we did that, it would go
Great, thanks very much, Dave.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Absolutely. Great to be here.